Good morning. I'm Nadine Godin-Saney, and I'm the chair of the Anti-Racism, Anti-Oppression Multicultural Committee, who is facilitating the service for today. I'm also on the Board of Trustees. I'm going to read an excerpt this morning from a book entitled Waking Up White and Finding Myself in the Story of Race by Debbie Irving. Just so you know, we do have this book in our library here, so if this piques your interest, you can take it out and read it. Not so long ago, if someone had called me a racist, I would have kicked and screamed in protest. But I'm a good person, I would have insisted. I don't see color. I don't have a racist bone in my body. I would have felt insulted and misunderstood and stomped off to lick my wounds. That's because I thought being a racist meant not liking people of color or being a name-calling bigot. For years, I struggled silently to understand race and racism. It turns out, stumbling block number one was that I didn't think I had a race, so I never thought to look within myself for answers. The way I understood it, race was for the other people, brown and black-skinned people. Don't get me wrong, if you put a census form in my hand, I would know to check white or Caucasian. It's more that I thought all those other categories, like Asian, African American, American Indian, and Latino, were the real races. I thought white was the raceless race, just plain normal, the one against which all others were measured. What I've learned is that thinking myself raceless allowed for a distorted frame of reference built on faulty beliefs. Never before have I been so keenly aware of how individual and cultural experiences, how individual our cultural experiences and perspectives are. That said, all Americans live within the context of one dominant culture, the one brought to this country by white Anglo settlers. Exploring one race relationship to that culture is where the waking up process begins. No one alive today created this mess, but everyone alive today has the power to work on undoing it. 400 years since its inception, American racism is all twisted up in our cultural fabric. But there's a loophole. People are not born racist. Racism is taught, and racism is learned. Ironically, racism, the great divider, is also one of the most vital links we share, a massive social dysfunction in which we all play a role. Perhaps the greatest irony for me has been the discovery that after all these years of trying to connect with people I was taught to see as different and less than, I've learned that the way to start is to connect with parts of myself lost in the process of learning to be white. And now I'd like to introduce our speaker for today, Dr. Charlay Davis. Dr. Davis became executive director of ISAAC, Interfaith Strategy for Advocacy and Action in the Community, in November 2014. Charlay was born and raised in Kalamazoo, the child of KPS educators Vern and Auga Davis. She grew up in Tabernacle Church of God in Christ, where ISAAC past president Elder Doug King was her youth pastor, and where her family is still actively involved. After graduating from Kalamazoo Central High School, Charlay went to the University of Michigan and earned her BA with concentrations on race, class, and gender inequalities, and social welfare. She continued at the U of M and earned her Master's of Social Work with a focus on children, youth, and families in community organizing. Recently, she received her PhD in educational policy from MSU, where her dissertation investigated diminishing the achievement gap. She has received an impressive list of awards for her work, including effective community organizing on issues of inequity. Charlay has taught at the University of Michigan and Michigan State University. In response to current events involving racial injustice across the U.S., Dr. Davis initiated and led Isaac in planning a racial healing service and action on September 2nd. Some of you may have attended that. The night of inspirational words, music, prayer, and action was designed to help people of all faiths and ethnicities listen, reflect, acknowledge, heal, stand, and act to end injustice. Please welcome me and please join me in welcoming Dr. Charlay Davis.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
I want to say thank you to Nadine for that very kind introduction. I also want to give a special thank you to Reverend Rachel for your words this morning and your leadership, also to Brian. Thank you for this invitation. I first visited People's Church probably about a year ago, and I was so touched and thankful for the love that I felt here. So now I am calling you all my People's Church family. I give appreciation to my Isaac family, those who are here today, the Erase family, the co-chairs of our anti-racism task force, Andrew Alm, in the back, and then Talisha, who unfortunately was unable to attend today, and then also to my Tabernacle Church of God in Christ family. And I'm thankful to God, my creator, for life and for bringing us here together this morning. Prayers and thoughts for our community, for the family and the friends of the victims following the serial shootings last night and this morning. Prayer for the shooter. Prayers for all those who were critically injured, those who witnessed the shootings, and also a special thank you to our public safety and our medical teams. So just a little bit about me. I was born and raised in Kalamazoo. I love Kalamazoo. It's such a special place. I've been in Ann Arbor for the past 17 years, but it's so good to be back. My first memorable moment with race was when I attended a vacation Bible school activity. And I must have been about 6 or 7 years old. And it was not my own church. It was a church that was in my neighborhood. It was a predominantly white church. And I was so excited because you know how they put those wonderful signs in the lawn and you're like, oh, something fun is going. It's just something wonderful is going on over there. And so I asked my mom to attend. She let me attend. And things were great until it was time to take a picture. And when we were taking the picture, all the little kids, we were together and we were trying to scooch together to be in the photo. And the lady who was standing by the photographer said, little girl, little black girl, I need you to scoot over. I saw some people cringe, yes. I need you to scoot over, you're not in the photo. And it was something about that, and there was no ill intent there. I don't think she meant any malicious harm at all. She was not aware, but it was something at that time that told me, you're different from everybody else. I was protected, I think, in school because my parents were educators. My dad was an administrator, a vice principal. My mom taught at my school second and third grade. So there was a protection there, for me at least, against institutionalized racism. And as we know, institutionalized racism is in every institution. However, I would hear at the dinner table my mom and dad talk about this thing called racism in the schools. As I became a preteen and a teenager, and then we were able to drive, we could drive to places and not depend on mom or dad dropping us off. And it became the commonplace, if there were two or more of us, that at times the police officers would be called, even if we were standing by our own cars or our parents' cars. We were seen as a threat. And what we did not know then was that that was institutionalized racism. So 1997, that's when I attended the University of Michigan. And I did not know until I stepped on campus that there was a young lady named Jennifer Gratz who wanted to sue, and she did sue, the University of Michigan, the Literature, Science, and Arts Department. And she said she was not admitted to the University of Michigan because an unqualified minority, person of color, took her spot. So you might hear that and say, oh, that's ludicrous. Nobody would even pay that any attention. Oh, yes, they did. It became a big deal. And I'm not sure what the campus was like before I got there, but the campus almost went up in flames, so to speak. It was so divided. It was hostile. There were hate crimes. There were people who would tell you, you took my friend's spot. You did not earn your way here. That was toxic. That was unhealthy. That was unsafe. And it got to the point where I called mom and dad and I told them, I said, I'm ready to come back home. I want to go to Western. And my dad, who did not want me to leave the city anyway, said, sure, come on back. But my mom said, Charlay, give it one more semester. And I'm glad I did. As I stayed that semester, I learned something about the Black Action Movement, BAM, and about those students who had come before me who had worked hard, who had put in a lot of time to ensure that the campus was a safe place for students of color. There were programs that I learned about, advisors, councils, lounges, history, that helped to support and retain students of color. And so I stayed. I even became a minority peer advisor at the University of Michigan. I want to say that we felt as if we had become activists because we felt as if our ancestors who had come before us, if they had helped to get these wonderful resources, it was only fitting for us to keep these wonderful resources on campus. So we had sit-ins, we had protests, some people took over buildings, we educated, we had programs, we had events. We were activists. I think that we did great work. The administration for some time stepped back with these radical students always being in their face. But there's one thing that we did not know then that I wish we would have known. We did not change the institution. We needed an erase on campus to change that institution. I was so saddened years ago as I would talk to folks who were still on campus, whether they worked or whether they had kids on campus, whatever was going on, and I started to hear that little by little, those programs, those councils, those advisors who we had fought to keep, they were taking them away, or they had already taken them away. We did not know we had to change the institution. I started working for Isaac in 2014. I love Isaac because they work on policy issues. They're interfaith. We have different people at the table. We're about community power, collective organizing, collective work. We've been around for 15 awesome years. We've pushed for legislative changes. I came to work for Isaac as a disenchanted higher ed person. I was disenchanted because we would try as staff or faculty to make change in higher ed. It didn't work. And so I was so happy after the interview because I saw people who were dedicated. They really believed in what they wanted to do and they were about root causes. To me, that's purpose-filled. So I began to work for Isaac. In 2015, here at People's Church, there was a one-day erase training, anti-racism training. And I remember this as if it happened yesterday. We were sitting kind of over in that direction toward the back, and we were looking at the continuum of becoming an anti-racist organization. Exclusive all the way to fully inclusive. And there was only one person, bless his heart, I love him to pieces, who said that we had achieved full inclusion. The majority of us looked at this continuum and we saw that though we had anti-racism intentions, we did not have that powerful action behind it. We were not as far on that continuum as we had hoped. We have folks in Isaac who love others, people different from them, but they had not gone through the anti-racism workshops. We had not had enough of these serious conversations, so we were so happy that these conversations were being had now. There was an intentionality that was necessary that we saw after this one-day training here at Isaac. We saw that we needed to analyze Isaac. We needed a new consciousness. We needed accountability, and we needed to increase the commitment to dismantle racism and white advantage. I'll never forget, I had just started, so probably about 3 months in, and I had never seen such long faces on everybody that was there at Isaac. This was serious, and I'm so happy that we all saw how serious this was and how we wanted to make some changes. I then remember Rochelle, and she put forth this wonderful idea to start a committee and to bring this to the leadership board, and we did. And the leadership board was happy. They were happy. They said, it's time. This is now the time. So we're on this journey. It's going to be a long journey, but we are excited. On this journey, even in the beginning stages, it became clear that even though we are well-intentioned, with the best intentions at heart, we have made some mistakes. We have done some things in power and privilege. We have not always listened to those who have seen us as well-meaning white saviors. It's important to understand, and I think Isaac definitely gets this, that our institution is a microcosm of society. Whatever is going on in society, if there's racism, whatever isms are out there, they are going to affect your institution. It does not matter even if social justice is at your core. Nobody is exempt. We have to dismantle inequities. We have our training sessions, our events. We change policy, but we do understand that this anti-racism piece has to be at the core. We've had to reflect on what people have said. We have listened. We have apologized. And we're standing in truth. In October, for the first time ever, we had our issues convention. And for the first time, we had anti-racism voted as one of the issues, along with early childhood education and youth violence prevention. We now have an anti-racism task force team led by Andrew Alm and Talisha Parker. We are so excited to see the direction of how we can change policy around race in Kalamazoo. We are so thankful to Dr. Mundy, to Fernando, to Lily, to Elisa for their leadership and their guidance through this process. We at Isaac now see that we want to be a fully inclusive organization, and we understand that we have to put in that institutionalized work so that our practices, our policies, our interactions are anti-racist, so that all groups of color, not only some, will feel welcomed and empowered to come to the table with us. When I think back again to U of M, if we would have known the power of changing the institution, we would still, at the University of Michigan, have all those wonderful programs out of the BAM movement. When we think about movements historically, there have been many movements that have been wonderful at the core, but there has been division and separation because those organizations have not done that internal work. The same things that they were fighting against in society pervaded their institution that was divisive. I'm sure a lot of you have seen the picture of Emmett Till and Trayvon Martin, both young black boys murdered in racism, one in 1955, one in 2012. Not much has changed. This fight for justice is about life and it's about death. It's about purpose. And it's about livelihood. It's not enough to hug those different from us or to invite them over for dinner. And that's okay to do. That's a part of fellowship. That's a part of learning and getting to know others. But it's an institution that has to be changed. If not, we are not leaving a better world for those who come behind us. So today, my call to action to my people's church family is for institutional change. Be someone that helps to transform the institution, not only for a moment, but for a lifetime. And I just want you to briefly raise your hand if you have some younger folks in your lives that you love and that you care about. I'm assuming everybody's going to raise their hand, right? Excellent, excellent. So my charge is to you, for our sons, for our daughters, for our neighbors, community members, nieces and nephews, even the children that we don't know but we love, that we work to change the institution for them. So you might ask, what can I do, Charlay, to help change or transform institutions? One is to develop an anti-racism team here at People's Church. Also, the Isaac anti-racism team. Andrew, feel free to talk to him. We meet on Tuesdays or the third Tuesday of the month at 6 p.m. I know you have an anti-racism committee here as well, getting involved with that. And then also thinking about the institutions in which you are connected to, whether it's your job, whether it's the school district, or where your kids or your grandkids go. We have to remember that no institution is untouched, and it is our job to help dismantle racism in these institutions. And then also, if you have any questions about Isaac, Andrea, Andrew, Rochelle, task force leaders, and also LB leaders, leadership board leaders, feel free to talk to them. And so I want to say this in closing. To my family here at People's Church, I call you to action to join this awesome movement in Kalamazoo. It's a movement for all of us, no matter where you are on the spectrum. It's a movement for all of us. ERASE is here today, representatives from ERASE, to talk more if you have questions. And I want to say to ERASE and to People's Church, Isaac is committed, and we thank you for your guidance. We thank you for your partnership. We are committed to learning how to transform our community for a lifetime and not just a moment. And just one parting thought here, quote from the Dalai Lama. It is not enough to be compassionate. You must act. Thank you.